IsraelSin.com.
So hello everybody, and I think we have a challenge here with a new student, which is always great, and people that have been missing last week, so short series. I'm wondering what to do with all the new people. I think I'll just have to continue. And whatever you get, you'll get. I hope it will be interesting. My name is Mira. And we're actually going to read one of the, when the copies will come, we're going to read together one of the most, I think, famous stories. So it's a story today, which is always good. And we're going to read one of the most famous stories in the Zohar, called the... Steve, I saw what you're doing, and it's kind
your
of...
Your eyes.
Yeah, somebody sent me a link, and I'm like, oh my God.
I don't want to keep putting up the same picture. I will be. It'll be fast.
Okay. I will do that. We're going to read one of the most famous stories in the Zohar, and it's also one of my favorite. So the Zohar is a collection of stories and homiletics, and I want to say something about that. Their choice, or it's not choice, it's a bchira. Their help me here with the word, the right word of bchira, like their decision making, maybe using this narrative of stories. Why does people use stories to talk about philosophy and to talk about religion? Why do they use stories? Why does people... A story is a very, very, very interesting method to use when you want to talk about belief and about religion. Make it clear, okay?
Because people can identify with a story and they can understand it that way. It's making it simple. It's not just concepts.
To make it more...
Okay, so to make it more accessible.
Was a story started because the general population was illiterate? And that was the only way you could get across your message, not by the written word, but by the spoken word. And therefore stories kept the audience entertained.
Okay, so it's entertaining.
It's a better way to express ambiguity and paradox,
exactly.
Things that are not clear but are still true. If you write something theoretical, you have to follow the laws of logic and reason and just... Okay, it's true, but you're missing something.
So we here we're starting to touch something that maybe is more that can tell us something about the Zohar, because if we're talking about literature that talks about secret and wants to be in the beginning for only few people who know really what Kabbalah is, so maybe they want to make it accessible. And I don't know if they want every child to know the stories of the Zohar. So this is why it's always like they could use a very philosophical language that will be only like the Rambam did, that only few people will understand. And suddenly you see a lot of stories. So here you say maybe when we talk about a world that is irrational, that is
non-rational.
And so
there's a difference.
Right. So it's a better way to express it. What else?
I was thinking that, but it really repeats, that just as a picture is worth a thousand words, a story is worth a thousand pictures. In a sense, the story becomes a mashal, which allows you to have a new mashal. It's an example, and then you can apply it to other situations.
Good.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. So you can imagine a story. When somebody tells you a story, you can imagine it.
Uh-huh.
Right.
But it
put
will.
Yourself in the same story.
You can put yourself, but more than you can imagine it, which means if you remember that I spoke about the fact that the Zohar wants to us to use the imagination, not to be stuck on the analytic side of the mind, really to see the pictures. When I am talking about a rose, they want you to see the rose. If you're talking about a deer, they want you to see the deer. Today we will see a beautiful story about the beautiful maiden without no eyes. And they really want you to see the maiden and to use the visual side of yourself. And on the other side, to also use not only the mashal, the parable, but also what is being reflected. So it helps you to use all kind of sides of yourself. So today we're gonna, yeah.
One addition, I think also stories keep everything fresh. They don't become dated. You know, they don't fall into old-fashioned language because you're always telling the story.
Right.
And it's new each time you tell it.
Right.
So this keeps, and you have to think it
right.
through.
Right. And if we think about Judaism, using stories was always very, very strong in our tradition. Think about the Torah. We have the Torah use both law, do that, do not do that, do that, do not do that. We have a lot of the logical law side. But then we have myth, right? Exodus, be given the Torah, Mount Sinai, right? The Sinai story. We have stories that we are being commanded to tell again and again. What is it all about Passover? Tell your son the story of Egypt. So story is a very, very important. And to retell the story, it's very, very important. And then we go to the Talmud. And again, we see collection of stories and laws. And it's called Halakha and Agadah, the legendary side of the Talmud, and the logical law side.
A story can always be informed with new meaning, whereas logic can't.
Exactly.
I mean,
so
2 and 2 is 4.
Exactly.
The story, every generation, any individual, every culture can become richer and richer, even more than the author even intended.
Beautiful. So Bialik, right? One of the fathers of the nation, I should say, Bialik also said you should have use the legend, the story, and retell it and write new halakha.
Mm-hmm.
All the time when you go back to the
first
story.
First the story and then the halakha.
Yeah, from Agadah to halakha. If you'll go to his very, very famous, you have it also on the internet in English, his very, very famous article, Agadah v'halakha, legend and story and law. So this is what he says. Like, go to the story, go to the old story, tell it again and write new halachot, new law. But the law comes from the legend. They're not disconnected. It's not the legendary side and the logical side. It's not like that. Judaism connect them both and understands the story of our lives and the deeds, what we do, has to be connected. It's not what I do and what I think my life, or I want my life to be. It always needs, in all kinds of ways, the story and the law to be connected. But as a real method of, it became very, like in the Talmud, and then Zohar, and then the Hasidut, really took this method of telling stories as a very, very important thing that you do. Both Rabbi Nachman and Baal Shem Tov told stories. And they didn't treat it as, this is stories for children. In the stories was all the secret of life. If you will read the stories of Rabbi Nachman, they are so beautiful and they're full of meaning. very, very recommended the stories of Rabbi Nachman. So stories are very, very important. And sometimes, why am I marketing the stories? In the research, it was the research of the secret of the Kabbalah in the university, and not only in the university, also in the in all kind of parts of Judaism. They used to say, okay, we have some stories. This is only, you know, some kind of a sipur misgeret, framework for what they really want to say. They want us to. And then when they really researched, they saw that it's not like that. Mm-hmm. So the story embodied really what the secret is. You cannot separate the homiletic from the story. And more than that, sometimes if you want to really understand what the Zohar wants, you have to go to the stories, because this is where they started to put themselves. The people who wrote it, suddenly you can really see that, ah, this character, it really have some kind of a, you know, you can start feel him, his taste, his favorite. I wrote my whole all master thesis on one figure in the Zohar, and I fell in love with him. And I started to research. I mean, he was really an amazing. And I could see how he developed and what he wants and his wishes. You can really start to see that there are real people. That there's something in this figure. So,
All the holy books of every religion are basically stories. They tell stories. As if it were history, but it's really a story.
Yeah, but sometimes the philosophers says, oh, this is, you know, legends.
Yeah.
This is for babies. So I'm saying here we see that in this genre, it was really, really important as a philosophical and theological method. To tell a story was not just a way to make it accessible or clearer or to draw people in. This was it. This is how you really should talk about life, through the legend.
The story is the lesson.
Yeah, yeah. So, so who doesn't have it? So, we have it Hebrew and English, and I know that some of you wants to use also the Hebrew, right? Mm-hmm. To go from the Hebrew to the English. So, in the Hebrew, it's... It's on the second page, on the second daf. It says Kolosos Shimon Bar Yochai in the Hebrew. You see, but on the bottom where it says Al Hitorerut B'Torah, to the people who can read both Hebrew and English, it's open here. And in the English, it's where it says on awakening to the Torah.
On awakening to the Torah. See.
Yeah.
Wait, not the voice is calling.
No, on awakening. No. On awakening. So to the people who do remember, I'm just going to the people who to the people who do who are here in the Sfirot part, I just want to frame when we talk about Torah in the Zohar, we talk about two terms. One is Tiferet. Do you remember Tiferet?
Yes.
It's in the middle, it's the integrating sphira, which usually will be the Torah from Sinai. What does that mean? that there is Torah from Sinai, which it usually will mean that it's internal in a way that it doesn't change all the time. That there's some kind, the belief of the Zohar, that some kind of revelation that wasn't just for now.
It's the first principle.
It's the first principle, yeah, it's something.
It's very called also Eretz Free of Life. And I think you know that the Torah is also Ki'etz Chayim Ilamachazitim Ba'at.
It's a free of life to the people who hold it. Something, the belief that the Torah from Sinai is something very stable, internal, doesn't change. That has something that doesn't, that it's not dependent on the interpretation. This is very important. If we talk about postmodern philosophy, that everything is by the eyes of the reflector, right? Whatever I see in it, this is it. Mm-hmm. If I don't see it, it doesn't exist. This is one way of looking at reality. If I don't see it, it's not here, and I create the world by my imagination or my interpretation or by my look. Yeah, this is, for the Zohar, this is not this. There's something that is not dependent on
the observer,
the person who sees it. I might not see it, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It means that I don't see it. It's completely different. It's not that, it's a different philosophy. For the whole, not the whole, I don't want to talk in big words, but some of the way of thinking of Torah Tesod, of the secret, Torah Tesod, how would you translate Torah Tesod? The secret, the mysticism way of thinking. Is that it's not if I see it or not. That it exists or not. Is it? It's all about revolution. Do I see it or not?
It's hidden.
It's hidden. We've been talking about it all the time. But because I teach in the secular yeshiva, at Bina all the time young people, and they are so influenced by postmodernism, and there is they cannot hold any kind of truth.
Because you know what?
They cannot hold any kind of truth because they were a generation who raised into there is no truth. It's all what I think.
Truth.
No truth.
Truth.
No truth. No emet.
Okay.
It's
no
what I think and what you think and this is it.
Everything is equally accepted.
Because it's in, it's all...
Oh yes.
It's a problem.
It's a serious problem.
I don't think it's a problem. It's it. This is it.
I don't think that they're aware of it. I don't think that they were taught it overtly.
This is just completely taught it that way.
The philosophy of that generation.
They were taught that.
They were taught that it's all in the eye of the interpreter. I don't know. We have young people. Do you meet it with your friends?
I don't think that you can make generalizations about any generation, but. Yes, subjectivity
nice
is definitely a common thread.
Yeah.
So how do you explain Chazara B'Tshuva if everything
look,
is...
a rebellion against that.
So that's
a psychological rebellion.
Rebellion against postmodernism.
Yeah, but it's not articulate that way.
I'll just say that, and you're right, you cannot generalize. I identify with my student, both the seeker of finding some kind of an anchor, that I will know something that we all agree on, and we can say that this is a met, they have some kind of a craving for that, but they're asking themselves, but how can I really find it, and can I find it if it's all in my mind? Mm-hmm. And who knows, like, they're really debating on that issue.
But that's a historical problem. They caught with that problem. How can I know anything?
Right, it's a generation with lots of questions. But I'm not coming just to analyze them. I'm saying that in the mysticism of the 13th century, that was not a way. That was not what they were thinking. They thought, oh, here there is internal Torah.
Which doesn't need us to be internal.
The Torah doesn't need us to interpret it. This is the Tiferes Sphira, but there is also oral Torah, which is Malchut. And the oral Torah is ours to teach, to learn, to understand, and to interpret it.
But the oral Torah can never contradict the written Torah. Is that not the case?
We already know that, and you know that in the Talmud, they told Lo Bashamayim. Sometimes we have conflicts. In the Zohar it's different, but we know that between the oral Torah and the Torah, it's not always so simple.
Right.
Rabbis really...
But
right, but sometimes. So Bat Kol comes and says, Lo Bashamayim, it's not in the hands of heaven.
That's how Sinai and
right.
That's not a contradiction of Torah. If I understand correctly, that means... The Torah says what it says, nonetheless, we need to do stuff in our world.
Yes.
So it's not quite a contradiction. It's not saying that the Torah is wrong, it's just saying
bringing it down.
We need to take a different position.
Well, no, we have to bring it down
in this case.
We have to bring it down into this into the world we're living in.
Not exactly.
So this is one way of looking at it. Some others will say we see here a real conflict.
Right.
Go away, Torah Sinai, now we are dominant on this world. And I read also articles talking about this is the first Judaism postmodernism to tell us Lo Bashamayim, he reinterpreted this is like that and this is the truth now. This is, you know, interpretation.
I think they're saying you gave us the Constitution, you gave us reason, and you gave us free will. Now, leave us alone. We have to decide. We can't always depend on you coming down from heaven.
So it's not contradicting, but it's also... But then the question is, what are the relationship between this internal Torah in heaven and our daily life, oral Torah? So... Right?
Like any law.
Right.
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 So today we're going to look at the Kabbalistic take on it. What, and they will say there is Tiferet, internal Torah. This is Etz Chaim. It doesn't change and it doesn't depend on us, but it has relationship with us.
And we'll see all kind of relationship. And there is oral Torah. Oral Torah is Sfirat Melchut. That one of the ways to describe this Sfirat is that it's ever changing. All the time, Melchut, if you remember, it's the Bor, Be'er, Ma'ayan, it's the well, the Bor is the pit. And the spring, right? It keeps changing. It also symbolized by Shoshana, which is a rose. In Hebrew, Shoshana comes also from the word Mishtana.
Oh.
That it keeps changing. So, this is not me. This is, right? It's the Midrash. Shoshana, both from Shesh Alim, but Shoshana doesn't have Shesh Alim, six leaves. But also Shoshana grows every time. Which means that there is much more movement. Yeah, Shana, which is both Shana, a year, it's repeat itself, but also Shinui, all the time, which is kind of a circle, but the circle is never the same. We read every year the Torah, we read it the same, it's the same Swara, but for us, it's different. Every time we meet, every year, every age that we meet it, we're different. And the story of giving birth will be different when you before birth, after birth, or when you're a grandmother, right? You identify with Sarah differently.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different. So, right, so this is oral Torah. It keeps changing. all the time. And what the Zohar table, one of the takes will be on what are the relationships with things that are internal when they meet the keep changing movement. It can't, they have to have some kind of relationship.
Can you just say a word about what you mean by internal?
So,
Torah, which is internal.
Static.
What?
It's static.
There's
static. You mean written?
It's a good question, because one way will be static, but another way will be not static, but still
dynamic.
But it has to be something that is bigger or is deeper.
It's
or
the laws of thermodynamics.
That is constant between this all ever changing
and unchanging.
Unchanging.
Yeah.
No, that's not necessarily.
Torah is unchanging.
Eternal is not unchanging. The eternal change
means more negative.
It does, but at different levels.
Unchanging.
You think it does, but this reality of the
actual Lord. I think it's, essentially the word of God is...
I would say fundamental, not unchanging.
It's a good question. Because
fundamental is closing in and defining...
They would...
Unchanging.
Yeah, but it's not changing.
Eternal.
Okay, I just wanted to hear your
take. I'm trying to think. In the book that I recommended last week, A River Come Out of Eden, right. That really, I think this is one of the best books to read about the Zohar. And it's not because Melila, because it's by Melila Helner Eschet. She's a teacher at Hartman and Hebrew University, and I think she's one of the biggest teachers today for Zohar. And she wrote this book, and she talks about in one of the... didn't bring it today. She talks about three stages of consciousness.
Okay.
Consciousness. So one consciousness is Kepel, which is really internal, which means that you cannot think about it. It's without words. And the other one will be Tishelet, which will be Tree of Life. That it does have words, so it's already not so abstract and not so ensophy, which is no boundaries, but it does has more stability and it's less changing, I should say, and it has more the understanding of the internal. And then you have the consciousness of the Malchut, which is keep all the time dynamic, new things, changing, and it's like today it's not what have been yesterday. And it has, and then the question will be, what will be the relationship between the ever-changing reality and things that I want them to be less changing and more with a flavor of internal, I would say. That, and this is what she called the consciousness of Tree of Life. What is your Tree of Life? It has to be had to do something with anchor.
Do you mean like a core?
A core. Yeah, and some will, in the Hasidut, some of them will say this is your Nekudah Pnimit. Mm-hmm. And in Sufism, I started to do, now to learn, how do you call it? Whirling?
Whirling?
Whirling.
Like the
Sufis?
Like
the Sufis. Yeah, like the Sufis, which is an amazing experience for me. No, but I have two amazing teachers here. And in Sufism, one leg, you go and you do a round, or you whirl around one leg, which has to be very stable, and this is unchanging. Mm-hmm. This is your anchor, this is your core. And then the other leg is the only one who does the movement. And it's very interesting to experience it with your body, that one side needs to be very stable, and the only other one is keep very fast changing, and you have to have some kind of relationship between being very stable and to, you know, and to develop your core.
Or else you fall down.
Yeah, and then but still be in a, not be stuck, be able to. Yeah, and it's very hard.
It's hard to stand on one leg and then keep turning.
I can imagine.
You don't stand the best. So come to my two Sufi teachers. It's really, 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 and I'm very, very. I went to a Sufi festival, tried it once, and said, "Wow, I have a Torah to learn here," which is really, really, really interesting. So for me, it started to teach me Kabbalah in my body because I didn't know they really developed the language of the body to do it.
Sufis
Muslims,
what? Aren't Sufis Muslims?
Yeah.
I love learning from Muslims and Christians and whoever.
So we're talking about the relationship between oral Torah, which means not only what we interpreted, but the keep changing movement, and the Torah.
And in Tikkun Shavuot, for example, what they do that they in that night. We try to unify them. We try to bring the oral Torah to the Torah, and the Torah to the oral Torah. We try to have some, we understand that they can be very far away most of the time, so we try to unify them. The night of Tikkun Shavuot in the Kabbalah is a marriage of the Torah Shebe'al Peh, of the oral Torah, with which is actually ourselves, with the divine Torah, with this unchanged. Okay, so let's read the story and try to see it in the text. I can't believe I stopped for 40 minutes. That was too much. What do you say? Should we read Hebrew and English or only English? Okay, so you can, you can go, all the people who feel comfortable with the Hebrew and English. And I'll just say that this is only part of the story. The story is really beautiful one. And this is only. So who is willing to read for us who is a beautiful maiden? Thank you, Lai.
Who is the beautiful maiden who has no eyes, whose body is concealed and yet revealed? She is revealed in the morning and concealed during the day, and is adorned with ornaments that are not. Now all the secret things that the Holy One does, he brings into the Holy Torah, and everything is to be found in Torah. And the Torah reveals a secret for an instant and is straightaway clothed with another garment. But it is hidden there and does not reveal itself. But the wise, who are full of eyes, even though that word matter has concealed herself in its garment, they see her through her garment. And when the word is momentarily revealed, in that first instant, just before she enters her garment, they throw eye openness at her. And even though it is immediately concealed, it is not lost from their eyes.
Okay. If you remember, yes, and
when you... No, I'm just...
What?
I'm in awe of this story.
Yeah.
That Sifur Nora.
Nova.
Yeah, Nora.
As Ir'ah.
Yeah,
as the awe. Yeah. So I'm glad it made such a impression. Usually what I realize is people just like, what is it? So whatever I say, it's like, go slowly. Let's go very, very, very slowly. So let's see what we see here. How to say what? So remember, it's a picture. So what do we see?
Beautiful maiden. Has no eyes. How do you understand that?
You only see her soul.
We don't know if it's because she's blind or because she was born without eyes. I don't understand what that means, no eyes, has no eyes.
Okay, so we have a question here. What does that mean? For we see that they describe a beautiful maiden. So it's feminine. Important.
Yeah. Also, the body is
or still the myth or the old?
It's a metaphor for the Torah. It's like the name.
So it might be
maybe
a metaphor.
The Torah is not looking at you, but it reveals you.
Okay, so we have some kind of a tension between concealed and revealed. I always, what I imagine it always like a girl from India that has a beautiful shawl, mm-hmm. okay. and it's like that, and it's keep, you know, the movement between revealing and concealing.
Mm-hmm. I think that you know, there's a concept that says that the eyes are the windows of the soul, that only through the eyes can you see what's really inside. And if there is this beautiful maiden, and all you can do is see its exterior, and she has no eyes to look into in order to see the soul, then that is an interesting description of a Torah, you know, turning on and turning off, closing out and closing, open up.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right.
So you don't have that tool, or you don't have that.
You don't have the ability to see to the.
Yeah, but I mean. You can't look there. That's not a window. That's
right.
not a so.
It's not for us to see.
That part is
feel.
That part is closed off to you. And it says here she's revealed in the morning.
Right.
And I thought it was going to say and concealed at night, but no, she's immediately concealed because she's concealed during the day. So how long is
no,
the morning?
No, but you get glimpse. You're
supposed
to get a glimpse.
Right.
Right.
What's the space of time that you have between morning and day? Very, very short. So she's revealed and then she's concealed, like right away, because during
right.
the day she's
right.
concealed.
And then it's adorned with ornaments that are not. So there's a contradiction.
Right. So we have a contradiction here, and we talked about the role of paradox. In mysticism, that paradox are really, really important to in order to touch something that is there and not there, right? It's like
life is paradox.
Right, right. So we see already that they're talking to us in the language of paradox. It's here and it's not here. You see it and you immediately don't see it. In the phrase in Aramaic, it's always "vaygalina," which means "oy vey," if I will reveal it. "Vaylagalina," it's "oy vey," if I won't reveal it. And let's think about secret. What's the secret of the secret? What's the secret of the secret?
What is
the secret of the secret?
That it's a secret.
If I will reveal the secret,
it will not be a secret.
It won't be a secret. Right, but if I will reveal the secret, I'll kill it.
Yes,
yes. People who reveal the secret are
you kill the secret.
You kill it. You kill it.
The minute you reveal it, you kill it.
You kill it.
So how do you reveal the secret? Without
killing the secret.
Killing the secret.
And then it's not a secret.
No. So you live in the paradox.
Right.
You live in
right.
Only very special people can.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
Because it says later on that only.
Oh, you're jumping. First, yeah.
Stay on
now,
the program.
So that means, yeah. yeah.
Well, maybe it's the ornaments that are not. Maybe it's something that you see that is revealed, but it's an illusion, so it isn't actually revealing the secret. And if she doesn't have eyes, she's not interpreting. She's not able to. She's absolute. She's to hear it. She's not receiving. She's not.
She's not influenced by.
We are seeing her, so we are.
Right, so here you meet it. Oh, I erased it. I don't know why I erased it. But it, we talked about how can the internal and the ever-changing, right, can relate it. How can me want to touch the internal, touch the secret, but not kill it, not hold it, not frame it?
It also makes you keep trying because it draws you in.
Right.
You're always looking, and then maybe you will catch a glimpse, and then.
Right.
And then again, and again.
Right. It's a movement. It's in the Kabbalistic language called Retzo Vashov. which means rats go after it and come back. But we know from Greek philosophy that how do you say in English the guy Sisyphus that had to go with the stone, and the moment he reached the it's how do you say Sisyphus?
Sisyphus.
How do you say Sisyphus?
Sisyphus.
So how? But Sisyphus.
No. Sisyphus is as an adjective.
Right. So we're not talking about that. We're not talking about this very tiring movement that I have to do it again. This is not it. It's some other movement that,
it's like which is called Ratzon.
I touch it and then I don't touch it. I touch it, I don't touch it.
But you're never going back to the same place.
You don't, exactly. Or you're just sparks. You don't exactly know what you do, but it's not the same. It's not the same. So first we have to understand that this is some kind of dynamic of secret, that you want to touch it, and you don't want to hold it. You don't want to frame it. This is like, you can't frame it. You can't, and if you're also the lover of Torah, you don't want to hold it. You want it to be free of your interpretation or your framing. You want to touch it and not touch. The way they imagine it many times, they call it in Aramaic, secret is
Raz. It's Raz.
Raz.
And they imagine it as a river, which means that the secret, it's not a body of knowledge that one day you will just discover what it is, and this is it, and then you know the secret, and you're the owner of the secret. The secret is this consciousness, state of consciousness.
That keeps flowing.
Mm-hmm. That keeps flowing and it never stops. And then you can never hold it, mm-hmm. but you can be in a relationship with it. Which is, for me, when I'm writing my PhD on the Zohar, I keep asking my professor, Yehuda Libes, can you tell me this? What does that mean? And I always ask, you ask him, so Yehuda, I just read yesterday in the Zohar this, and I didn't understand it. Can you just tell me what does that mean? And I want an answer. Again and again, I want an answer. And then he's like, Mira, you can't. Sorry. It's like, sorry, no answer. You should dance again with the Zohar. I'm not after you. I'm like, I just really wanted it simple. I needed it for my footnotes. No answer. I mean, if you don't touch it, you just don't touch it.
It's not very.
No. He always tells me, you can't own the Zohar. You can dance with it a little bit. And and sometimes it's very frustrating because you want to know, and I mean you want to know.
In this passage, it says, "And when the word is momentarily revealed," and then why do they bring in a word? Don't you need to hear that?
Where do you see it?
After full of eyes, do you see that? But the wise who are full of eyes, even though the word
or the matter
has concealed herself in its garment, they see her through her garment. And when the word is momentarily revealed in that first instant, just before she enters her garment, they throw eye openness at her. Now the word, usually we do Shema Yisrael and not see Israel, look Israel.
I'm looking at
It's a different modality altogether. It's like,
but the whole thing is about,
but yeah, I'm looking at the Hebrew,
the eyes and throwing eye openness.
Yeah. In the Hebrew, it's a concealed word.
It says milastuma. It's
not. Yeah. It's which is mean a different. It's not a word like we know what word means.
So this is a different construct.
Yeah.
What is matter in the Hebrew?
But let's go. Well, we. let's go for, they're telling us now all the secret things, right, the Holy One, bring it into the Holy Torah, right? It does, we read something closer to it, if you remember, in the first time we met. You see it? Mm-hmm. We'll continue it. And everything is in the Torah, right? Mm-hmm. And it's hidden there, and it reveals only for a minute. And the people who are the people who are revealing what the Torah is, the secret, who are the people? Look at, be very, very close to the text.
Humans.
But the wise.
Full of eyes.
Full of eyes. Full of eyes. What does that mean?
You can see through it, they see everything.
She is. What she is?
She has no eyes. They're full of eyes.
And they're full of eyes. There's something, I don't want immediately to interpret it, but let's look at the Kriyot, how do you say the Kriyot? Oh, sorry, my English, it's 8 o'clock in the evening, this kind of...
I think this is sarcastic.
Has wings, going out of the wings. Yeah.
Are they being ironic here about the wise men?
Why do you think so?
About the what?
Wise men, you know. Well, they think they see everything.
No, I don't know why. I don't know. Because look how they read it, right? And when the look, I don't know if I don't think in my eyes, they're not ironic. Or in my eyes, they say, "Look, are full of eyes." And what do they throw at her? Maybe interpretation. Yeah.
But their eye openness.
Eye openness.
If you think someone can't see, you're gonna look.
That's true.
That's true. Mm.
If you think,
oh, that's beautiful. It's beautiful what you said now. This is beautiful. This is a Zoharic moment. Thank you. What did you really? Now you had one. It's most beautiful. It's interesting that the secret is being revealed when you think that nobody looks at you, but somebody looks.
You also don't know if they're knowledgeable.
Right. Right, but what they're doing, and they
But it doesn't say she's blind. She says she has no eyes.
Right,
it's a different story.
It's a different, but what they have
is lots of eyes.
Lots of eyes and open eyes, which means something about us. What do we need? Right? We are the reader.
We are the reader, so we have to do something with eyes. In Hebrew,
they wrote her Petach Enayim, if you can kipul the ein. But in Aramaic, actually also the Hebrew translation here is not so good. You will see in a minute why am I insisting on it. In Aramaic, they swear with their open eye, which is Petach Ein. And let's think about people, who women, mainly women, who had revelation. One was Hagar. Do you know what was the name of Hagar's spring when she saw God?
Hagar's what? Dream?
Hagar's spring.
Oh, spring.
Spring?
She sat near a spring.
Of water.
Yeah.
She sat near a spring, like body of water. And the name of it was?
I'm not sure I remember.
What?
Somebody who sees me. We know, and we also know about Tamar, which was the woman who, by our tradition, her lineage brought David, the Messiah. This is actually came from her. She met Judah on a spring called Petach Enayim. So it's a place, it's a secret place that women had some kind of prophecy that had to do with opening your eyes. I'm opening my eyes and something is happening. One is Ishmael is being born, and the other one was the lineage of David. Perez and Zerach, which is also named of Tifrots, which means to break free, or to, and Zerach, which means to shine, is in this place.
So what they're throwing at her
is the ability to see deeply.
To see through.
To see through. Right. And even though she immediately concealed, it is not lost from their eyes. She is already there. She already did like that. She's not here. But she's not lost from their eyes. Yes.
But it says Belebush Acher.
You're going to the Hebrew.
No, but she straight away clothes it with another garment. It's not the same garment. So maybe what they're saying here is you get to one level and then there'll be something else that will all of a sudden close it off from you.
Yeah.
And then you get to another level
it's like an
for an instant.
You peel.
And then there's something else that closes it off.
Yeah, but what do you have? But what do you have? You're right, this is keep changing. You don't hold it. What do you have? You have something in your eyes that doesn't go away.
An impression.
An impression maybe, or an emotion, or a memory.
And you peel the layers of her layers, like an onion that has layers.
Right. Right. So you peel it and she's already there, but you have something. Yeah.
It seems to me that the description here is describing, is presenting Torah as rather elusive. That means the ability of the human to appreciate or understand or to make contact with the Torah is almost impossible. And if it is possible, it's only for a fleeting moment, which is removing Torah from Malchut altogether. It is saying there's no easy key to get into the Torah, and most of you will never see it. The average person thinks he sees it, but doesn't see it, because
but
it's elusive.
The secret parts.
I'm sorry?
That's only the secret parts. That's not the open parts. In other words,
But what is Torah if not its secret message?
What is any story if not its inner message? No. There's the shot. I mean, there's what you see is what you get, and of course all of the interpretations of that. But then, I think what they're trying to say is that there are other things in there
that you don't get to see.
Well, you might, because here it says, even though it is immediately concealed, it is not lost from the eyes of the wise. So who are the wise? We don't know, but.
No, I think that what you're saying is that the person who does get the opportunity to see inside, despite the closed eyes or the non-eyes, keeps that forever. Because once you've experienced that,
that's your experience, absolutely.
But I think she's saying something. To see, because it's a constant movement, because there's something there, an impression, and then it goes away, so that makes you want to go.
No, but you can capture that. The wise can capture that moment. And it stays with it forever.
I don't know about capture. It says it's not lost. I don't know about capture.
I don't know also about capture, but it has to do something with impression. It's not lost.
It is an impression. I mean, what happens is that you get that experience, then you're out of the revealing into the concealing, but you do an impression or capture. It is something, the experience that you had that remains, with your point, remains with you. It almost is another building block of your, whatever that means, in terms of your confidence, in terms of your willingness or your desire or your, whatever it is, to keep going, to just keep going with it.
There's an English word called evocative, and I don't know what the Hebrew word would be for evocative.
Sexy.
No, to evoke.
Yeah, evocative is more than to evoke. Evocative is something that the poetry is evocative. It creates a mood.
brings uncertainty.
I think you see here, like it all a root, which is awakening has to do with it also, even though you write it differently.
It's evocative.
I know it's been written different, but it has to do with like something that might arise here.
But I think that I'm using that and trying to put what he just said in one word, that it gives you some kind of understanding, but not understanding like 2 and 2 is 4, right? For his age.
Exactly.
And you can't really get it, but you feel both happy and sad at the same time.
You can't get it because the flow, it's a constant flow. It's ever changing.
And then you go on to something else.
Yeah. So that's why you're studying it. Why bother studying?
Well, once you experience it, you it's...
Why bother getting up in the morning?
Who's saying that?
Because there's other things besides the secret to know.
It
has to be worth, the search has to be worthwhile at every different level.
Yes.
There isn't just all or nothing.
You know, if the image is of a person without eyes, right, who is covered all the time, except for a brief moment in the morning, and who doesn't bear itself, herself, so.
But she's adorned with
things. No, she isn't adorned. She's adorned with things that are not.
I know. But she's constantly pulling you in because she has these things that are adornments. It's almost like a mirage. It's a mirage of a very attractive woman, and she has ornaments. So you're constant. It's almost beyond your control. She's drawing you in, and she's closing it off. She's drawing you in, and she's closing it off. She's drawing you in, and she's closing it off. I think that the ornaments, I feel, I don't know if that's what other people say, are the ornaments that are not, are what's making you, and the fact that she's beautiful, are making you more curious and more and always wanting to.
It's a long
So think about, we talked about in the first, I think in the first class, we talked about the erotic side of Zohar, and why do we need, if we need, I don't know if everybody needs, but
why do we need
the erotic consciousness that right, temptation is something that we want and we touch and then we don't have it. And we touch and we don't have it. It's not always there, and it has to be, keep changing. If not, it won't tempt us anymore. If we'll owe it, probably, right? Problem of what we think about marriage, right? If we own it, it might not, right? It might not tempt us anymore. So it has to do...
with passion.
Right, right. So, right.
It's a seduction.
I don't think it should be like that, but I mean, it's all in our mind. But it has to do with that it has to be erotic, in a way. But Eros is power of life, a source of life. Like, and the sense that we have what to learn, we have where to expand, we want more of it, we need to keep moving. The whole book of Songs of Songs, Shir HaShirim, which is the most erotic book I ever read.
And on Pesach.
And right, and it has only 8 chapters, and the beloved and the lover and the beloved, the man and the wife keep searching for each other all the time, and the last chapter, they meet. And all the, you know, all the lovers of the, all the chavrim, all the boys are waiting for the girls, and they tell him, "Ayafa b'nashim, chavrim makshivim lekolech. We are all listening to your voice. Come, we are here. We are waiting for you." And the, you know, and he's here, and they're calling her, and she was looking for him everywhere.
Yes.
And what does she say? The last verse. She says, "Brach lecha dodi, udman lecha natzvi." She tells him, they're calling her and they're telling him, "We are here." And she's saying, "You can now go away, my beloved one. I was looking for you all the time. Go away, and you will look, and I will look at you as like a deer jumping from mountain to mountain."
Thrill of the chase.
Right?
The chase.
I don't need to marry you. You can keep jumping And he was waiting for her, and she's like, okay, that was beautiful search. And this Megillah, this quote, is being called the one Rabbi Akiva, right? Said, Song of Songs is the most important book in the whole Bible, right? The erotic side. Then the and you read it every Friday afternoon before Shabbat, and then came Ha'ari, which was a very famous Kabbalist, and he wrote Lecha Dodi, not him, but in his group, Michel Kabatz, his student, wrote Lecha Dodi, and he said, you know what, you will read it on Friday, but what I want you to do in Shabbat is boy kala, like come bride, and we'll write Ateret Bala, and we'll get married. So there should be married, but there should be also go away. Let's not catch right. After Shabbat, let's not catch each other anymore. And this is two consciousness of the 6 days of the week that are moving, and then one is Shabbat. We're
so
together.
You always need to capture something concrete in order to continue to search. Right. Only
beautiful. Right. Right. This is maybe the impression of something that stays
not
with me.
Not necessarily. If you catch something, most people, if they get something, they stop searching.
And for each one, we know that if we'll talk about it metaphorical, about 6 days of the week on Shabbat, for some people, you know, they mainly will be want to be in the 6 days of the week, and some people will want to be at home on the couch, and that's beautiful also, right? It's like
it's different on Shabbat than on Tuesday. It really is.
I know.
No,
I know, I'm a rabbi. And on Shabbat, I don't want to move. Okay, so let's keep continue and read a little bit. Okay. So, Len, can you keep reading for us? Human beings are so confused.
Okay. Human beings are so confused in their minds. They do not see the way of truth in Torah. Torah calls out to them every day, in love, but they do not want to turn their heads. Even though I said that the Torah removes the word from the sheath, it seems that one quickly hides away. That is certainly true. But when she reveals herself from her sheath and hides herself right away, she does so only for those who know her intimately.
Okay, so let's stop for a minute.
Yes.
Right, they're starting with human beings are so confused in what?
In their minds.
In their minds. Who are they talking to? Mind.
Yes. People who are passionate.
Right.
Us.
Just use their rational emotions, not their emotions.
So they're fighting with someone. Who is it? Right? Who?
Mitnagdim.
Could be Mitnagdim. So confused. What is that? How do you say in Hebrew confused?
Mevulbal.
Mevulbal or? Navoch.
Navoch.
Right, so who are they talking to?
Oh, perplexed.
Perplexed. But in Aramaic, it's Nora Nevochim. It's a...
who are they talking to?
Intellectuals.
To the perplexed.
But who talks? Intellectual. Who was their intellectual in Rambam? Because they're also...
He espoused the intellectual.
Right. And we have a very, very, very similar parable that to what is written here in Guides of the Perplex. So they're not so naive, just to know. I mean, they're talking to someone, and they're saying, yeah, you're right, this is Moreh Nevuchim, you might be also a Guide of the Perplex, you might be also... yeah, you are also very confused in your mind. Mind, in their eyes, is a very, in their thing, is a very confusing consciousness. Of course, yeah.
Oh, sorry. Last week you said about the difference between Ashkenazi and Sephardi and how they study the Kabbalah. And one is not in your mind, the Ashkenazi is in your mind, whereas this, the Sfaradi is just internalizing it by learning it by heart and without using your mind. And it's becoming like, I interpret it as meaning that it just becomes part of you, becomes who you are.
Right.
Whereas if you try to analyze it and interpret it in your, and it's just so confusing in your mind, you should just accept it as it is.
Could
not it? Interpreting it.
But that
and wouldn't this give the Gushpanka to that kind of way of studying, just to be, it should just be what it is and don't try to interpret it and you don't have to understand everything and it should just be who we are.
But, well, I think probably the sporadic will say you're right. I mean, I'm having a hard time with it because I like to analyze it. And I still want to touch a secret.
But that's like the instruction, but
if you're approaching it, yeah. Intuitive.
Observation that people that are
could
trying to, yeah. to understand it in their minds are only going to be confused.
You're coming to the same.
Could be, could be. And if you also practice in meditation, they always keep telling you, right? What did someone here practice meditation?
Yes, like
so. Right. So what do they say about the mind all the time? The Buddhists. It's talking about like a jumping monkey.
It's a monkey. It goes up
right?
and down the pole.
But, right.
It's like a jumping monkey. It's like if you so you are being caught
you just,
in it.
You just want, and you want to just keep it going up and down the pole with your breath, and just
yeah.
keep it aside and get to the revealing of
right.
yourself.
Right, right. You want to be with something that is stable, right? The neshama,
mm-hmm.
the breath, which is internal, right? Mm-hmm. So here we see something a little bit closer. I think that they really also talk with the Rambam here. Because I know that and that he has a very, very similar, the same parable.
Same parable?
Yeah, he has also a parable about the beautiful maiden, the Torah as a beautiful maiden.
But without eyes?
No, not without eyes. But there he has also something about a maiden that you have to, from chair to chair, you need to find the keys and... And here they're telling him, oh, that's a nice, you know, there are some people who are confused in the mind. That's what you can get by being in the mind. But look to, the Torah calls out to them every day in what?
Love.
In love. Here we are talking about a different language. You can talk about the mind. That's interesting. Pretty confusing. But the Torah calls you out every day in love. And now I want to ask you something that is very, I think, striking. For me it was striking. What does that mean that the Torah calls you? What does that mean? Like, when I grew up, the Torah was a book. And
I will open the Torah, right?
You hear something? You hear?
Noise
of
the page
turning. No, right? I'm the reader. I'm an active. I'm open it. And I'm reading the words. And here we have a Torah that is completely active. She is calling me. And I don't turn my head. What does that mean for them with the Torah calling me? And that... I don't, or whoever, only few people, right, can really listen. What does that mean? How can you understand it that the Torah is so active and calling you with love? What does that mean?
Ignorance is bliss. The Torah is the knowledge that's calling you. You want an award, you hear
the
talk.
Come and study.
You don't want
to
know more.
So what is the Torah here?
What is the Torah? At this point of my ignorance, it's knowledge. So I only see it as knowledge.
But you see it as knowledge. It's already not an ignorance. I don't know if you're ignorant, but you see it means that we're not only talking about the five books of the Torah.
Right.
It means that we need to load the word Torah with new meanings.
How did you get to that?
Because do you have the five, like the book of Genesis calling you?
But what book calls anybody?
Right, this is why I'm asking, what is the Torah here?
So how did you get to that there being additional books? Books don't call.
No.
Exactly, so maybe the Torah is not a book. I'm trying to understand what is the Torah for them. If the Torah is active and is calling, so now we need to understand that the Torah, not, this is exactly what I said, what book is calling you?
Well, it doesn't have to be understood literally.
Exactly, but we have to understand what does that mean, an active Torah that is calling you. You can say a knowledge that is not active.
That's meaning.
That there is some kind of wisdom. It doesn't mean that it calls me. It doesn't mean that there is something that this is something that for me it's a little bit weird. What does that mean that there is an active force of something that calls you?
It's exciting. I can explain it, but not on the level that you're asking.
Okay.
Okay. Because I don't quite understand what you're asking. I understand what you're asking. I don't know how to answer it. But I do know that...
Me neither. I don't know how to answer it also.
I know you know that when I'm in a synagogue on a day of when the Torah is read, for me, the reading of the Torah and the prayers are a dialogue between man and God. That man is talking to God, and then the reading of the Torah, reading the words out loud, are essentially reading the words of God to man. And you can just view that as a learning experience, or you can view that as a dialogue between man and God. And if you listen to those words, if you hear those words...
So it becomes a living experience?
Then it can be a real dialogue. But most people just listen.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful because you're talking about personal experience of really through reading the words of the Torah in a ceremony.
Right.
The ceremony is really important.
Right.
Why? The fact that it's like, yeah, you hear something active. You hear it.
And it's not simply the words in the book being read to Trump. It's far more than that. It's,
yep.
Right, and it might be the where they started to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
They might be, because I think we do have here something, we can imagine here the ceremony of the Torah, right? That you take the Torah out of its Aron HaKodesh, and you...
And you take off its ornaments.
And you take off its ornament, and you open it.
And you still don't get
and
it.
You, and, right, and you read it.
Right. You still don't get it.
Right, and you imagine, and you—I don't know if you meant—you experience.
It becomes a personal.
Experience. You experience a personal experience of being answered.
Yes.
Being answered. Yes.
In Hebrew, and maybe I'm wrong, when you say the word Torah, it has two connotations. It's first five books, but it means something. The other connotation is Torah is. It's something, it's knowledge per se, knowledge as such.
Right, this is for sure.
And maybe I'm not negating that. I think for somebody who has that experience, it's. But I think you can add the broader meaning of Torah. The Torah. Human beings desire to know. That's what differentiates us from animals, fundamentally.
I think there's no, knowledge not by holy books.
Yeah, but no, but not knowledge, not in the 2 and 2 is 4, but knowledge. Facts are knowledge, but not all knowledge is factual.
But they're not talking about facts.
How do you know what they're talking about? I mean, what he's trying to say is just as legitimate as what you're saying, Sharon. If you just take a breath and let him have an opportunity to share his understanding.
No, I'm asking the question. Because I think it means something more than just the first five books.
No, Torah is used in Jewish terms as Jewish knowledge. So, total Jewish knowledge. That phrase Torah refers to...
So we
Jewish.
Have questions here. We have
Pardon?
We have questions. What is the Torah here? Is it the Jewish knowledge? Is it the five books? Is
yeah.
it wisdom? I don't
no,
know if you have answers.
It goes beyond the five books.
If it's beyond the five books.
Right. Yeah.
I'm just opening the question because we see that it's active. for me, it's very important the fact that the Torah calls you.
Yes.
The Torah is active upon you, not only you upon, right? There is something. One of my friends keeps telling me that the best and also the hardest professor in life, we call it Professor Chaim.
Oh.
And again, whenever I'm like, oh, Dori, you don't know what happened to me, so the Professor Chaim knocked again, right? Which is, right, how we do a life professor. Right? It was like, right, and I was like, yeah, Professor Chaim is kind of calling me again, right? And, yeah.
No, I just wondered, couldn't another word for calling me be a commandment?
Could be.
And if you have the commandments, then you are being called to do something. It's a command.
Right, it's a brit. But look, it's a
command calls you to do something. It's another way, if I command somebody, I'm calling them to do something.
So Torah calls,
at least in my house, it's a
right.
Commandment.
Torah calls you,
no,
but look at
them, it's a commandment.
I'm going with you, but it says Torah calls out to them every day.
Well, you're commanded to do
right, you commanded. How do you command if you will go with you, what you're being expected? Torah calls you to them out every day in love. It's a commandment, it's another one, but it calls you in love. And I just want to say that there is a beautiful midrash that they are, I told you that they always sit on midrashim, that every day, bat kol, how do you translate bat kol?
Voice from heaven.
A voice from heaven.
Is coming out of Mount Horeb, which is Mount Sinai. Kol yom yetzet bat kol. Mm-hmm. Every day, which means that the revelation of Sinai through this, according to this midrash, wasn't a one-time show. It wasn't like, okay, God gave Torah once, and then we all try now to understand it. We got the five books, we got the broken the tablets and the broken tablets, and this is it. And now we're now trying to interpret it. Do you interpret it?
Interpret.
Okay. According to this midrash, every day there is Mamad Har Sinai, the voice coming out of Sinai, but according to this midrash, nobody listens. Kol yom, every day there is Bat Kol Yosef from Mount Sinai, but we are not there. We are here. We are in right Sinai. We are in Israel. According to this midrash, and the bat kol is over there, in Thailand, but it keeps calling you.
But that's like here also. You don't turn around to listen.
And you don't turn around to listen. So I'm not going to be so slow with you guys, and I'll keep moving. But one other question that I always keep asking myself: if somebody calls you me with love,
why?
Yeah, if somebody calls me with love. Why don't I turn my head? For me, it's fascinating. It's for me like, if the Torah calls the Torah, come on, it can really help me sometimes. It's like, you know, I'm not. And it calls me out of love. It's not saying, hey, it's like calling me, come. And I'm like, I'm busy. Sorry, I'm stuck here with all the, you know, mess.
Too much responsibility. People are afraid of it.
I don't want to answer it now because it's such a big question. But it's just.
Think love will always be there. It's out of love. It's there today. It'll be there tomorrow.
Could be. I don't want to answer it because it's like it's for you. For each one of us, it's maybe a different reason. But I'm like, oh, again, it called me and I was busy, too busy to listen. And it's and it's a everyday experience for me.
That as a Jewish mother.
Yeah, but you know, she loves me, she wants my best, and I'm like, sorry, I'm stuck again with, you know, all the things that are messy in my life, which is quite a lot. So,
welcome to the
but, right? So, there are questions here. Why?
I was listening to the news last night and reported that there are about 50 some odd mayors of cities who are being indicted for corruption.
Here it is.
Town and villages, you know, divided in different ways.
Right.
And I asked someone to explain it, and he said, that's politics.
Right.
And it occurred to me that
so
that there's something. Right.
So
they didn't turn, they didn't hear.
Right, so they actually also understand, they tell us, because most human beings are so confused in their minds, it's she's calling with love, and it's called and the heart. And we're like, sorry, I'm here, I don't listen, I'm off.
Maybe there's a lot of other stuff calling you at the same time, and you're not,
right.
Can't make up. There's so much noise.
Right, there is a lot of noise, and you don't hear. There is a lot of noise. And when the Torah comes out for a minute, it's been seen very, it's like it's not there all the time. It calls you, but it's not there. And who see it? Only to the people who know her immediately, intimately. So now, in the next...
It says in the Hebrew something else.
Yeah.
Sheodim ba v'nodaim ba. What is nodaim ba?
Known by her.
Known by her.
Yeah, it's interesting. Melila translated intimately.
Is this section known to her?
I think he couldn't decide if it's Sheodim ba and nodaim ba. So she. It's also the Aramaic. It's like and. I should check it in the Aramaic, what it's been written. I should check the Aramaic. This is also translation, so I don't know why she wrote Yod Imba Venoda Imba. I should check it, okay? Okay, so I want to keep go because they give us now a parable about what does that mean to actually be a lover of the Torah. Because they do answer us, how can you touch the Torah a little bit. So let's try to understand what they're trying to tell us. So who is willing to read for us now? But is it okay that I'll take water for a minute?
Just
a minute.
Oh, she's reading.
Oh, I didn't read.
She just went.
I think what it's fundamental is, she would be so proud of the woman. The woman is more than just knowledge.
I like your point about she not wanting too much responsibility. Because if you look at the woman, you're going to have to do it.
To what can this be compared? To what can this be compared to a beloved who is beautiful in every way and he can be within the palace? She has one lover, unknown to anyone, who is hidden too. Out of his love for her, this lover passes by her gate constantly, lifting his eyes to every side.
Okay.
Go on.
Yeah.
She knows that her lover is hopping about her gate constantly. What does she do? She opens a little window in a hidden palace and reveals her face to her lover, then swiftly withdraws, concealing herself. No one near her lover sees or reflects, only the lover.
Continue.
Only the lover and his heart and his soul and everything within him flow out to her, and he knows that out of him, of love for him, she revealed herself to him for that one moment to awaken love in him.
I think this is one of the, isn't it? Do you like it? I think it's a beautiful, but let's try it. Okay, so
it's a big tease.
It's a big tease.
Yeah, I have another word for this.
Right. So she's teasing.
As a man, I find it very
frustrating.
Yeah?
You walk away. Thank you very much. Bye.
But in those days, women were much more hidden. And snored.
No, but it's her lover. He lives in the palace with
her. Well, it's someone who loves her. He doesn't live in the palace.
Sure she does.
Well, she thinks he's at
the gate. No, he does too.
He's at the gate.
So actually, that's always a nice talk in a mixed group of men and women, really.
Which place is that?
He doesn't get into the gate.
No, I'm saying it's
probably.
Is the poor calling essentially or out of love? They're not the same.
I don't know. Let's check. But first we see to what this can be to a beloved. Oh, we don't know yet.
I know, climate is pretty cool.
We don't know yet. We don't know yet. But let's see.
It's never acquainted. It's never
So I can see the people here who wants to come on, be serious, be serious. But here we're not in the serious stage yet.
No.
We're in the teasing stage.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah?
Far.
It's not there yet. Okay,
this is,
you're right. This is you're rushing it, right? You're rushing it.
He's described as her lover. And he loves her, but she doesn't necessarily.
At my age, I might die before.
I was just going to say it. I want to get down to the Tachlis.
So no, sorry guys, it's not getting down to Tachlis. It's not. We have you right, and I want to use it. But right, there is a very, very long foreplay here. Right, it's not that.
Ah.
You're right. It's
a, it says. But we're also looking at it.
He's quoting her.
Yeah. Yes.
Well,
good. Yes. Time that this was written. This would have been sort of long.
You're right. So you can imagine Spain. Right. You should imagine Spain, and you should imagine the time that I started to understand it when I was in Barcelona, and I started to realize that, you know, all this, you know, men. You know, the cultural thing also, you know, singing, hoping to see the woman in the, right? And all the legends, we know that there is a princess in the tower and that she is not there immediately.
So
she does, and right.
And
of course, so if we talk about it also in a cultural point of view, we're talking also about something else. It's not like, okay, right? It's not Facebook, it's not JDate, it's not like that. It's a different culture.
Listen, there was a
and here.
Well, I used to live, many years ago, I lived in Spain on a small island called Formentera, which is the smallest of the Balearic Islands. I used to live on a small island called Formentera, which is the smallest of the Balearic Islands.
And?
It's off the coast. Anyway, what happened was the condition they allowed us hippies to go and live there was that one of the representatives of the church on the island made it real clear that we could be here, smoke, do anything we wanted, but don't touch the girls who were native to the island. So it was like all these young little girls, and we were all young then, and they would just kind of prance themselves while we're eating in the cafe or whatever, all around them, knowing that we would never be able to approach them. And in a sense, they were safe, but it was this dance going on, this dance that, in one sense, I'm reading out of this particular parable. That was a feeling I got, that they were there, they were prancing, they were dancing all around us, knowing we couldn't touch them, and they were forbidden to be with us. So it was almost a free exchange without touching, but this kind of situation was going on. It was really a
I can guess that was very erotic.
It was extraordinarily erotic.
I mean, when we talk about Eros, and remember that we are the Zohar is a
good
Most probably, but I was sued. So stoned enough.
You never did it.
What?
You didn't stray, there wasn't
a... Let me tell you something. You know, the island was idyllic. You didn't want to mess.
She wasn't a
But, you know...
Going back to the Zohar talks about Eros.
Yes.
He does. And he's...
Yes.
Eros. And he's very interested in it. When I was teaching in the university, and I was the TA, the assistant teacher of Melilla, and we started to understand that it's actually such an erotic book, and we knew that our students in the Hebrew University, half of them are yeshiva boys, like, you know, all kind of religious girls and yeshiva girls, but doing a degree in Hebrew University, and we cannot talk about it. And every time both she and I read what's going on here, and like most of us are getting so red, and we cannot talk about it, but this is it. They're not ashamed to talk about Eros.
Mm-hmm.
They're not, and this is one of the beauty of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's Ashkara Eros, but it's also symbolic of human beings lusting for meaning.
Right? Exactly.
It's
heresy.
And it's not separate. Like
source of life.
Dualism.
Source of life. This
together.
Is source of life.
Mm-hmm. And we say, in Bible sex is to know somebody.
Ledat, right?
Ledat. You know her.
Right? Right, yeah, right,
it's
right.
Different than having sex with her. You know her.
Nachon, again, right. You're right. So they don't separate. It's not, I think, I don't want to generalize, but
you may.
Maybe where there's some kind of influence of Christianity, of, you know, going back to Eden and, you know, the whole sin of temptation. Right, temptation. So nobody, no errors, woman is dangerous, and this was wrong. And reading here, it's also some kind of liberation from it. Mm-hmm. They're dialoguing with Christianity and say no.
Yes.
No. Erotic, and we are not going into, we are not nuns, and we are not monks, and we are dialoguing with this.
We don't separate spirit from body.
Right, we don't.
They do.
Right, we don't separate it, and we talk about Torah, and we talk about sexuality, and that's okay.
It's the first prayer in the morning.
Right, and it's okay. So, you know, if you're a teacher and if you're a Zohar teacher, you need to, you know what you're talking about.
Well, it's amazing.
It's been connected.
But surely with your yeshiva students, there is a total separation.
Right.
You cannot teach them what the Zohar is saying.
So I mean, for some of them,
are they missing out something?
It's a big secret.
I don't know. I mean, it might be that they will decide to talk about it in a different. I mean, I don't want to generalize. It might be that they will want to talk about it in different places.
Mm-hmm. But not
with
you.
Yeshiva, not with
not
me.
With you.
Not with a teacher who sits like that. I mean, it might be, and I respect it. Talk about it in the meaning. I'm not the only. This is not me talking about it. This is called the Vero, which was a Kabbalistic from the 16th century. And what I'm trying to tell you, it's not me, New Age, in talking about it. This is here. It's like, this is a parable. A woman is like doing like that. See her and not see her, and he is. But we also talking, if we will talk, we already talked about the sexual. We're also talking about how do you become a lover of Torah, real, you know, also the Torah. And here he tells us, Luke, to a beloved who is beautiful in every way, right? She has how many lovers?
One.
He's a loyalty.
Right, and he unknown to anyone. He is hidden too. The lover, the Torah is one, and the lover is one, which means that my beloved Torah and me as a lover, we have intimate relationship, and you are out of it.
That's right. That's exactly right.
It's not yours to be discovered, my Torah. It's mine. There is only one lover to this process.
What does that mean? There's only one lover.
This is what it says.
Only the Torah. One lover?
Here, in this parable,
yes.
What's happening here, the Torah that is calling to you,
is yours.
It's only yours.
It's only yours.
The Torah that's calling to you
is only yours.
The Torah calls out
to everybody.
It's always one-on-one. No, but it's always one-on-one.
Yes.
But look, she does so to only one who knows her intimately. And then they tell you, come and see. How do you know the Torah intimately?
When you study, when you really get what it's written, when you have an intimacy with her.
Yes,
but
it's yours. Yes. I cannot be intimate
that's
in the
right.
way that you're intimate.
Correct.
That's
right.
And
that's
a one-on-one.
Teacher said
one-on-one.
He can't tell you the answer.
That's right.
Beautiful.
Because that's
Thank
his
you.
Answer,
mm-hmm.
not your answer.
Thank you.
Well done.
I didn't think about it.
Explaining. I'm just...
No.
No, you did explain
excellent.
It to me. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
you're right. And...
Amira asked her teacher, what does this mean? She wanted an explanation. He said he wouldn't tell her.
I wanted quick footnotes, right.
His explanation, and she has to find her own explanation.
Exactly.
And going back to and if I will try to be, you know, if I, if you look at me like that, so and I will have to. Okay, okay. So I was like, where did she take it from? Yeah.
No, not that. Yeah. Following this thing of one-on-one.
Yes.
Your eyes are closed, but mine aren't open. It's my interpretation of that very same passage, that very same whatever.
Yeah.
Is, has opened my eyes to it, where you are not seeing what I'm seeing. Therefore, your eyes are closed, and you're going back to the beginning. So,
very nice.
Always a one-on-one.
Excellent.
How we interpret what it's saying is allowing us either in or not.
Yep. That's beautiful, because that's one of the understanding of it is that...
Sorry, what happened in Mamad Har Sinai, the Midrash says God spoke to everybody, but everybody heard it differently.
That's right, there it is.
So it's a personal, it was a personal love relationship.
Yep.
Developed between each person.
That's what made it so powerful.
And God's
but that's God. This is Torah. And does anyone know Torah?
Torah is the word of God.
I understand. So, but from what you said, maybe I misunderstood. I thought you could never really know.
You can know it. You know. You can know it. You want to say
you
something?
You can know it? Oh, she said
I'll tell you what. Let's say you're married. And it's the first year of marriage. And you're really still in love.
Compared to the second year, when it becomes less so.
When the second year, you're still really don't know the other person.
That's correct.
You still really don't know the other person.
Never.
As a matter of fact, when you get to know her, that's a whole thing.
You never should reveal yourself fully.
You should never really get to know
her. No, never reveal yourself fully. So keep something to yourself.
We have to know, and we cannot know. It's a paradox. Vai galina, vai lagnina. Right? Oy vey, if I will reveal it. And oy vey, if I won't.
So it's easy to say there's just one letter, because we may never read it. We will
then. Right, right. But I think what we see here, first, I want to say something about the examples that you brought. And that for me, the best way to understand it is from relationship. Right, right. I'm saying it's, I think it's a good example for us to do check-in. Do I understand it? Where in my relationship? Like, I think it talks about, and I think I kept telling you. And
so
I
my knowing
you see.
Changes.
Right.
I know in one way today, and I know in another way tomorrow.
And also the person I'm in a relationship with keep changing, and I might be able to be in with the interaction of like what's changing and to be able to reflect and to see, and I might not, and I might be the lover and I might not be the lover of it,
but you have to change also.
Yeah. And you see here also that he needs to look what does he do. Out of his love for her, this lover passes by her gate constantly. He does the wheeling. She is in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Very
and
nice.
He does ooh,
very nice.
And he's
she's
looking
like
for
a
her.
Tree.
Yeah, she's a
tree.
Right? She's a tree of life. And he does like, where are you? Where are you? Where are you? Do I see you? Do I see you? Do I see you? Right? He's all the time he's looking. Mm-hmm. Right? So yes, it's pretty teasing, but maybe it tells us something about teasing in life, which can be very frustrating. I'm serious, because we might want to know the secret now.
But that's the drive for everything in civilization.
Mm-hmm.
Art, science, everything else is... We know we're never going to know everything about everything.
And we have to be very, very constant about it.
That's why we're going around the tree of life.
She's the axis.
She's the axis.
He's revolving around the world.
Yes.
And there is no life. There's, she She's the center of gravity.
Yep. Just like the Torah.
So
we
spin around. There's no earth. There's no revolve.
Right.
There's no earth.
Right, and it can be very, very, it can be very frustrating if we're not, if we don't surrender to it.
So how about,
the fact of agreeing of me, like this, I'm imagining this guy, okay, I'm walking here again, come on, go out, okay, I don't see anything, again. It's very...
She says she opens a little bit.
She's open, then, I mean, yeah, but...
She reveals her face to her lover, then swiftly withdraws, but she does reveal herself...
Well, first, so
fleetingly, momentarily, but again and again. That's so eventually, if you do it enough times, and you pursue someone enough, then eventually maybe you'll get a 360-degree kind of thing. Keep going around long enough.
Yeah, but what you learn here...
You're willing to do the work.
But what we learn
most
here...
Most people are not willing to do the work.
Right, but what we learn here, that love has to do something with faith, with emunah.
Emunah, you have to believe it.
Yeah. Without, you know...
Faithfulness also, continuing
right,
to...
Right, and faithfulness, in brit. Right, I have to, I mean, I have to, and emunah is something very hard because I don't know if I'll get it. You're right that she's helping him, but he doesn't know if for a moment she will open it.
Or not.
He has to do it anyway. He has to go, and just yesterday, I was with my friend, one of my friends, who really is in love with this beautiful girl, and he's in love with her for 3 years, and he really, 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 really loves her, and he always wants to be near her, and she's always in love with someone else. She's always, always, always in love with someone
she
else.
She has not found yet.
Right, and she doesn't see him, and he's completely just want to be near her and to see her and to see her and to see her as much as he can. And he's like, she's beautiful, she's full of spirit, she's very stable. He's like, and he knows he wants her. And so he, and we sit in Shabbat, right? We sit in the studio of artists of Ruta. And another friend of mine said, do you think you'll get her in the end? And I was, you know, I'm influenced by that. So I'm thinking, I'm like, will he get her? Or will he not get her? I mean, part of me sees that like she's not interested in him. She's all the time everywhere. But he really all the time so constantly just
and just so psychologically
right,
in his
and,
mind.
Right, it's and
really
right, and he that's can
he
I know
her, it'll be the end.
That's it. The end of
and
the
right.
The end
could
of
be I mean I have no clue. I have no clue if
she's
he should
sure.
get her, if he will get her. I mean I just saw him really all the time, and he really loves her. Yeah.
I want to double the paradox.
And my friend said, in the end, after she will get all that, she will get him. And I was like,
unless,
I don't know. Yeah.
When you reach a level of knowing, in inverted commas, but then your knowledge of yourself changes, because we don't really know ourselves either. Our knowing of ourselves changes every day. Some people not, they're very boring people, but people that are interesting change all the time. So she does this, oh, wait a minute, what am I feeling? I'm at a different level of knowledge, and my level of knowledge is really knowing how ignorant I really am. Because that's really, that's wisdom,
right.
Knowledge,
right.
Is to know how ignorant you are. And the more you know, the more ignorant you become.
Okay. Or more surrenderer you come.
No, you know what you know. You know what you don't know, what you're ignorant about. And you don't know what you don't know. And what you don't know, you don't know is infinite. And if you know what you don't know, at least you can learn it and know it. But the minute you do that, more of that you don't know what you don't know moves into it.
If I understand right, what you're trying to experience.
The more knowledge you get, the more you're knowledgeable of your own ignorance.
But what we've seen here, and this is very, very important, if it's not a Sisyphic Sisyphic process. How can you open to the unknown, to the fact that everything is keep changing, and that it will be process of expansion and love and understanding that I can't hold it, but I'm still really in awe.
Take joy
and in love and enjoy and not I don't know anything again. Yeah. Like I thought that I know and I don't know anything. What the hell, I'm not gonna stop looking for. You know about all the people, like friends of mine who are saying, you know the people who are keep looking for themselves? You know of them, they're going to this retreat and that retreat and they don't know that they like, what are they looking for? I mean, don't keep looking. Or the people that have, you know, the people who are just, you know, that they're the ultimate child in their eyes and they're really enjoying it and they're like the seeker of light life and they're in full full of expansion. And you don't know if you're in that, if you're just confused and you keep looking for yourself and nothing is happening actually. Or you're in, wow, I don't know, and I keep expand. Mm-hmm. Keep expand. Keep it being in process of love. Keep understanding that I actually get and don't get. Vaigalina, mm-hmm. Vaigalina. Vaigalina, Vaigalina. Oi, if I will reveal, oi, if I won't.
That's
it's okay. It's okay, and it's a process of love. And because we have only 5 minutes, look what, because she loves him, right, she reveals, if we'll go to, maybe next time we'll finish it, she reveals, if you will see what she does, and if you'll go to the last passage, and his heart and soul and everything with him flow out to her, and he knows that out of love for him, she reveals herself to him for that one moment, to awaken love in him.
That's beautiful.
That, enough?
Yeah. That the fact that she disappears, that he cannot hold her, the fact that he has to keep looking, it's out of love. It's not out of lust. Or out of you're not deserve to eat, or you cannot, you know, you okay, you're not deserve to the secret. It's out of love. The fact that you fall in again, you know, the fact that you're still in the process, the fact that you're in the teasing, it's okay.
But in the end, she gives it.
In the yeah, yeah, you cannot hold it. Yeah, it's okay. Thanks. Okay, so you know. I don't want to say that if you run, you won't get it because who knows.